O Heavenly Father,
O Heavenly Father,
Divine
Mother, beloved Jesus Christ,
Blessed Master,
dearest Mother,
beloved David,
Saints and Sages of all religions,
I bow to all of you.
Free my life from all obstacles.
And give me physical, mental, and spiritual development. Make my mind thy temple. Make my heart thy altar. Make my love thy home. Be thou the only king. Reigning on the throne of my consciousness.
Peace.
Amen. A short meditation. I have lyrics for this, what we're going to listen to. It's by George Strauss. And it's called Morning. And it's kind of what I want to talk about. So I'll read you just these 8 lines and then I'll start the meditations. And tomorrow the sun will shine again. And on the path that I shall take, it will unite us, happy ones, again. Amid this same sun-breathing earth, and to the shore, broad, blue-waved, we shall quietly and slowly descend. Speechless we shall gaze into others' eyes, and the speechless silence of bliss shall fall on us.
Planning a hut.
So years ago, Elaine gave me this beautiful little article that we put in the journal in, let's see, oh, about the year. Anyway, it was 2003. And it's covering this issue of who we are when we enter this world and who we are. For me, it's always struck me as it points to who we are even as we leave this world. So let me read this. It's called Knoxville Summer of 1915. It's the lyrics from something that Samuel Barber did. It's quite beautiful. And then also it came from James Agee. And he was quite something as a poet. And he was from Knoxville himself, and he has some kind of memories of being very young, but he has this beautiful, just two paragraphs here, it's quite a nice little thing about existentialism. It's who am I? So he asks at the end. And he's a young child, maybe a baby. On the rough, wet grass of the backyard, my father and mother have spread quilts. We all lie there, my mother, my father, my uncle, my aunt, and I too am lying there. They are not talking much, and the talk is quiet, of nothing in particular, of nothing at all in particular, of nothing at all. The stars are wide and alive, they seem very near. All my people are larger bodies than mine, with voices gentle and meaningless like the voices of sleeping birds. One is an artist, he is living at home. One is a musician, she is living at home. One is my mother, who is good to me. One is my father, who is good to me. By some chance, here they are, all on this earth. And who shall ever tell the sorrow of being on this earth, lying on quilts on the grass in a summer evening among the sounds of the night? May God bless my people, my uncle, my aunt, my mother, my good father. Oh, remember them kindly in their time of trouble and in the hour of their taking away. After a little, I am taken in and put to bed. Sleep, soft, smiling, draws me unto her, and those receive me who quietly treat me as one familiar and well-beloved in that home, but will not, oh, will not, not now, not ever, but will not ever tell me who I am. So when I read this lyrics for the music that we just listened to in a translation, it's originally in German. I'll read that again. And tomorrow the sun will shine again. And on the path that I shall take, it will unite us, happy ones, again, amid this same sun-breathing earth. And to the shore, broad, blue-waved, we shall quietly and slowly descend. Speechless we shall gaze into other eyes, others' eyes, and the speechless silence of bliss shall fall on us. People do have, people of all places, of all times, do have access to this idea of this being a blissful place, strange and difficult to comprehend. What I love about the poem by Agee is the idea that, you know, I'm being treated well and it's nice, but nice people, and I'm accepted so well, but they won't tell me the one thing I really want to know. Who am I? Agee died of alcoholism and smoked till he died fairly young at 52. But he's an intellectual, lived in his mind a lot. But we all have access to the higher realms and the spiritual understanding. There's an element in all of us that knows who we are, certain of it. It's what makes us think we should be the greatest football player, whatever it is, the greatest, because we have this notion of greatness. We just misdirect it, of course. So it made me think, too, of Psalm 23. because it kind of deals in some of the same things. The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. He maketh me to lie down in green pastures. He leadeth me beside the still waters. He restoreth my soul. He leadeth me in the paths of righteousness for his name's sake. Yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadows of death, I will fear no evil, for thou art with me. Thy rod and thy staff, they comfort me. Thou preparest a table before me in the presence of mine enemies. Thou anointest my head with oil. My cup runneth over. Surely goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life, and I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever. So I think, I hope you can all understand the connections there. This idea that we've met many times before and we'll come back. You know, the poem by Barbara is really it's a love poem that he wrote to his wife, and he gave her four. He's a great composer and well known at the time already, and he did this one as the last one. And they're love poems, but it's a recognition of the how important the relationship for him that it was. But that we've known each other many times, and we'll come back many times perhaps. But that at each stage of our development, we go to places filled with people who support us until we get to the final stage when we're all alone. Final stage. At that time, we're well clad in clothes and knowledge to see where it's all going. We all raise ourselves up into the astral and the causal planes. And these crucifixions that Mother talks about are the means that transition into each of these planes and to understand them. The fact that we go to sleep each night and we enter these realms, and at different levels we can even reach the causal planes at deep sleep. So we're taught. But between the lifetimes, some people, Mother said, that most people or a lot of people sleep between the lifetimes and come back into this realm. Still wondering. With that flicker of great insight and great knowledge within, still they don't know who they are. They don't know what this realm is all about. And as we go through and we gain great attainment in this life, it gives us access to the higher realms, so that when we enter, after leaving this body, when we enter the realm of the astral realm, we're familiar with it. You know, my mom, on her having her fifth child, left the body, and she said, you know, it was the golden light, and that I didn't want, and so blissful, so comforting and so comfortable that she didn't want to come back. And then my sister cried, and she heard the cry. She could hear everyone in the operating room. She could hear the doctor and the anesthesiologist saying that we're losing her. She's not breathing, or her heart's stopping. Excuse me. So she... that's what pulled her back, was the child, because she was ready to leave. It was such an easy transition. Now, obviously, she's of high enough attainment. She was, is, a high enough attainment to enter into the astral realm with consciousness intact and only see the astral realm as a place that you can enter with great gladness after being, as Master put it, taking off a heavy overcoat. Coming into this life is like putting on an overcoat, so leaving the life must be a relief of that. It's funny how many different people have near-death experiences and how different they all are. You know, that world of the astral world is, when you talk about dreams as being things we can make up, what we don't realize is that when we think that, is that what the astral realm is. It is a chance to experiment with relationships, with things, with places, with power. All of those things are things that we play with in our mind. And we think it's lesser than this world, you know, because it's a fantasy, it's a fancy. But it's not. It's a realm that we don't understand. We don't understand that it influences this realm greatly. The difference being that the fantasy and the world that we created for this lifetime is something that we did in preparation for this lifetime, and we continue to play it out in fidelity to the what we've put ourselves, what positions and what goals we put ourselves to. That's why we all struggle with religion. We think there's got to be some way of getting guidance to know the higher realm when we're busy with all the daily things we have to do. This world is so requires so much attention from us. And so we set aside a day out of 7 days, ideally, and we have a day of rest or two nowadays. But we are living out what we wanted to have happen. When we go through higher experiences and when we get access to the natural powers, they're not supernatural, the natural powers of how this realm is really created, we can change people. We can. There are many examples of saints curing people. Well, how is that possible? What are they doing? There's stuff associated with all of the great stories with Jesus walking on water and curing people, all those things. This is a man, this is a person who's actualized in the realm, in the higher realms, knowing how things are created there and that affect this realm. That's the natural part. This realm here is natural. It is being supported, though, on a foundation of experiences, fantasies, fancies, ideas brought into fruition as a way of making it come to be. So in the astral realm, we spend a lot of effort and play around with all of the things that eventually become manifest in this realm. This realm is more solid and more real in one sense, but less real in reality, because it's such a fancy, a fantasy that we have so devoutly struggled with and created in this way that we really want to have this experience. We want to have a realm that we feel bricks and mortar and ground and trees, feel these things and people, and feel people and touch them. In the upper realms, we are more conscious that we're all the same, that we're all one. Not completely conscious of that. We don't really believe it if we're just in the astral plane. And we don't really ultimately believe it even in the causal plane. We have to go through the final crucifixion to shed the ideas that we are constrained by. They are our own ideas. And we share an idea when we get to the point of sharing, especially spiritual and religious teachings. It's kind of a lineage. We talk about lineage in the realm of the physical with guru lineage. But there's also a lineage with ourself, with our higher self, with our oversoul, however you want to look at it. So we have a lineage that explains this body physically too. Our family, the genetics, etc. We have a lineage associated with our trying to understand essentially what and who we are. This is the thing that we're dealing with in the highest realms. If we still have a barrier between us and the infinite. Ramakrishna had to have his guru, Todapuri, force him to break the connection he had. Even someone as high as Ramakrishna was at that time, of course, he attained full realization by going through that and attaining Nirvikalpa Samadhi, Sahaja Samadhi. How many of us have spent time as little babies, wondering what in the world we're up against, what in the world's going on here, and then slowly lose it because we do have parents. We do get older. We can move around in the realm, and we do have parents who tell us what they expect of us, and we forget the realm that we came from. It's the good news and the bad news. If you want to be actualized in this world and function well in it, we have to have that. But we give up a lot for it. And again, that's something we have chosen to do because we want to experience something that's manifested and more limited. It's a constraint. The upper realms are not constrained as much. You know, I think a lot of people who have very idealistic and are unrealistic in this realm probably are higher souls. They are very angry, perhaps, with how this world is run because they have memory of or knowledge. Now, of course, there's plenty of examples of people who just complain, but I'm saying there's legitimate concerns about this realm from a point of view of an astral being, a person who knows that realm. And identifies in that realm and is coming down here for whatever reason and not finding it to his liking, but has come to help this realm. Now, can they cause trouble and be revolutionaries and terrorists? Probably, yes. Because one of the things they have to learn, we all have to learn, is to acknowledge that this is something that we own. We can't say it's not us. So sometimes that people talk about in the world but not of the world, and that can be misunderstood because this world is made of God stuff. It's designed for us. But we are not this world. That is very true. We are consciousness. We are spirit. But the spirit is much more difficult to understand than just that. The spirit can congeal into physical matter. So we have to have respect for all life here, all things, and all people. We're all taught, and this is a point of contention with our present generation, that we're taught that man is unique amongst the animals. He's not just an animal. He has animal characteristics, animal DNA, and that is part of the test. But we are, as Meher Baba says, we are at the very brink, at the very end of evolutionary struggle and travel. We're on the last quarter mile. And we have a responsibility to push through, to understand, and to bring others through if that's what God directs us to do. Certainly, even just being away shore, even not coming back into this realm, it does has an effect on this realm, has effect on people that you know. And then there's gurus who literally are charged with many souls. None of this is not voluntary. One of the strangest stories is of Ravana, who is a devil type person in Rama's story, in the Ramayana. And he was he had insulted somebody, a great sage, at the door to Vishnu's. Now, if I don't get the story exactly right, it's the principle that is important, that he had insulted someone and was given the opportunity, forced to come back to this realm, and to either be one lifetime as a bad person, or whatever it would be, 10 or 100 lifetimes as a normal person, for not respecting a sage who came to the higher realms. And these are difficult things to understand, because I'll tell you another odd thing, and I know some of you have heard this before, but it's stumped many people. And that is, they were in the Ramanashram. Raman Maharshi was sitting and listening to people talk about Hitler. And they were wondering what kind of karma he would be taking on and what kind of person he was. And Raman Maharshi just volunteered the notion, well, maybe he's a yoni. I know when I first read that, I really had to sit down and think. He wasn't saying that's what it was, the case. But he was telling us, he was really telling us something, that it's possible. We're all on a stage and we take different roles. We get that. But it's difficult to imagine someone like Hitler being a high soul, being given a very difficult task, if that's what it was. Might not be. You know, the Christians have the story of Lucifer being a fallen angel. And I think in some respects, falling isn't so wrong or incorrect. Papa says there's no, you know, good or evil. But, you know, our minds make it so. So Lucifer coming down fits the stories that Mother tells much better, which is that there are souls coming into the world with a task and a desire or a destiny to fulfill. And they're moving away from God. They're coming down into the realm. In this sense, we are all avatars. Lucifer is the light bringer. That's what the name means. Wow, how do you get to that? And there's wars in heaven over him. So the Zoroastrians have this dual nature, what's called in the Christian sense, a Manichaean philosophy, that if there's a God who's good and a God who's not. Mother's teachings and Master's teachings lift us above that realm. And we see that this is all God's play. All people in it are God's play. And we do have to resolve karma and those things. I understand that too. But we, looking on this realm, we don't know what karma an individual has, though he may be associating with people who have very bad karma and have many lifetimes to go through to work through it. Individuals, we do not know. Generally, we can look into the realm. We can take the teachings that are given to us by scripture. and we recognize that these are good lessons to learn. God told me many, many years ago that God speaks through his own mouth. God's word comes from his own mouth. And the word is not a book. It can be alluded to, it can be reflected in a book, in the words on a page. But it's not the book. And it's not even the sayings per se. It is something that comes from the mouth of God. And of course, Master teaches us that the mouth of God is at the medulla. So he adds a allegorical aspect to it also. And this is where the spiritual realm, we are connected with the spiritual energy that furnishes the energy that runs this body. And there are allegories beyond that. Even Papa, in his poem, says, "Mystery, thy name is God." Now, what he's saying, I suppose, is that knowing English, he couldn't, there's no words to explain it. So it's a mystery. Best way to explain it. To explain him, to explain God's working in this world. Who am I? I think that Ramana Maharshi has a great insight there to work with intellectual people anyway. I think it does have a benefit for the people who are like him. But for others, the bhakti path is there too. The bhakti path connects you with God inwardly at the heart level. And that's the way to get to God. Papa said that the highest state is where bhakti and jnani join into para-bhakti. Master called it para-muktas, and then the state that they attain, these great masters, Papa called sahaja samadhi, and Mother used that term too. These are mysterious things that we needn't worry too much about until we get there. But they are described in this way. These people that you read who have these great insights, these great poets and writers and artists of all sorts, singers, artists of that sort, they have access to this realm, and they have bliss that comes to them. There's, you know, William Blake talked about having it as a young child. Times of trance states, we would say. I don't know the word I've read about him, and I can't remember now how he described it. Many people have had this, and some of the great literature is written by people who have this understanding. These are great states, but they're often conflicted with very difficult times. Herman Melville's book on Moby Dick is just full of allegory, and his other books about being in the South Seas, he has some writings in there that are ecstatic, and yet he had a very difficult life, very depressed. He never seemed to get the success that he needed enough to make a living with anyway. A very difficult time for him. And yet clearly had access to these higher realms. The formalized teachings that we have from India teach us that we can get to Savakalpa Samadhi. And it's a state that you enter into and come out of. And it can lead you into a life that's more at balance, and you can live a more fulfilling life. And then there's nirvikalpa samadhi, where you're conscious. So savikalpa samadhi is more withdrawn and more in a trance state, and unable to very easily converse in the world here and interact. But the nirvikalpa samadhi is described as a state where you can be in the world and talk with people and interact with the world, even do your job perhaps. And then there's sahaja samadhi, where Papa says, this state, you don't have to have any effort to attain. And you never leave it, and it's a state from which you cannot fall. All of us, until we reach that state, can fall as we climb. But the sahaja samadhi state is the final, is going through and finishing the final crucifixion, the final kundalini, however you want to see it, at the third eye point. So my mother called it the third eye point, and I think Master did too. Many people have. At the sixth center, through which you attain full Christhood. You're Jesus, the Son of Man, entering in, and Christ, the Son of God. After attaining it. And once you get to that point, you cannot fall. After a little, I am taken in and put to bed. Sleep, soft, smiling, draws me unto her, and those receive me who quietly treat me as one familiar and well-beloved in that home. But will not, oh, will not, not now, not ever, but will not ever tell me who I am. So that's a soft landing for a person coming into this realm, two parents and extended family. Everybody is glad to have you. Think how many people come into this realm without those minimum requirements. Sad to think, but this is the way that souls were intended to come into this realm. And it's what we must try to, as a society, get back to. So I started to say Ramana Maharshi was correct in saying, who am I? It's like a needle for me. It's like it digs right at the heart of the quandary that is living in this realm. Kate has an interesting experience as a child. And you're welcome to interrupt now, Kate, and tell that if you want to, but that you wanted to know what your face looked like.
I think you've misremembered that. I think because of that other thing we were hearing, what I wanted to know is after death, when I was in heaven, would I still know that I'm me? And it was a problem that I spent a lot of time on, a lot of time thinking about, and not just for a very short period of time, but for actually years at a time, just thinking about that. And I remember
it was associated with death then. It was after passing. No, I didn't remember that.
Yeah, and before, perhaps before life too, but it was particularly after death. So, and I did ask a few people, but nobody could.
Well, they couldn't understand the question, could they, very well?
Not really. not really. And I saw when I met Mother, I thought, oh, I was just mistaking this ego self, this particular lifetime.
Right.
And that's why, am I still this person in this lifetime, in this, in this body afterwards? But it wasn't just a little thing I thought about and it went away. It troubled me. I thought about it a lot.
It's a weird way to think. It's a weird way to phrase it too, isn't it? Yeah. But it is that same existential. It's still that same existential issue, isn't it?
Well, I still know I'm me. I mean,
so what we heard the other day was, and I misunderstood or I misremembered, but what we heard the other day was, the Christ knows how you looked. He knew your face before you knew your parents. Remember? That's so beautiful. Something we heard. I don't remember. It wasn't The Chosen that I'm always talking about, but it was something that I read or heard. That puts you in direct connection with God. It doesn't disconnect you from your parents, but it does differentiate you from your parents to know that you have a position in the world independent of them. But only because the Christ knew you. That's the consciousness that is aware of your who you are. You know, when I say Om Shri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Ram or God Christ Guru, I'll say Mother sometimes. Those, you can, it's funny, you really can feel those in your heart. But who am I? Just goes right to the center through the third eye point. It's very, very powerful. Nobody else is hardly teaching that, although Know Thyself is an old saying going back before the Greeks, to know thyself. Let's put it into English, and Ramana Maharshi knew English. The way that we understand it, to say, who am I? Wow. Pretty amazing.
And Walt Whitman used to chant his own name.
Yeah, that's right. Is that right? Yeah. Well, that's something like that. David's read about him, and he's told us a few of those things, hasn't he?
Yeah. Hmm.
Yeah, you know, it's funny you mentioned that, because I've always had a resistance to changing my name to a spiritual name or to some other name. When I was in high school, there was two Larrys amongst the four or five friends that were close there. And because there's two of us, we started going by our middle name. And then I think I've told this before, but so the others also, we went by their middle names just to switch things around. And that's perfectly. In fact, whenever I would see those, you know, in years afterwards, they'd call me Joseph or Joe. And I responded to it perfectly clearly. I knew who they were talking to. But at the same time, I'm a little worried about the moving from the name that you're born with. However, you know, I'm sure there are good reasons to do so. I don't mean to say it's not possible or not. And of course, wives will change their last name in the Western world. But so my weird sister Janice, she married a man named last name Lees, L-E-I-S, and she was going to be Janice Colees. So she thought, That's not very good. No, sorry. She would be Janice Lees, and they changed it to Janice. They both took the name Colees, so that they both changed their name. That's how they resolved it. So we all thought she should be Licole rather than have the Lees there. But we were surprised to see how they actually chose it. But I wonder, if it's... I can see where it change. It could change your destiny. It could change and maybe help you if you had good advice on changing your name. You know, Master used to call Kriyananda Walter. And so that must, you know, that must be difficult because his last name was Walters, and he just said it to him all the time. So you always accept anything like that coming from a guru. Anyone know anything about Mother or David? Did they ever ask, ever change anybody's name or recommend a different name? There are unfortunate names for sure.
I didn't want to change my name when I got married.
Maybe. That's natural, isn't it? Yeah.
Maybe I knew that it wasn't going to last.
No, I think a lot of women feel that way, and modern women do feel that way. How necessary is it? I mean, in my, you know, our parents' generation, you weren't even Mrs. Treva Kohler. You were Mrs. Richard Kohler. It's Mr. Richard Kohler and Mrs. Richard Kohler. So, I mean, talk about take away your identity. It's even more so.
Yeah.
But at least eventually that changed. But that's fairly recent. Formerly you were. Yeah. Well, those things had to change, didn't they?
Name is God. When you repeat God's name, like, it's not just a word, it's the substance of God. Ram.
Yeah.
I wanted to comment on, sorry, Larry, I'm in a motel room and it's dark in here. I flashed on something you said, about who am I, and when I ask it, it's just a mission. But I thought of something that way back in the early.
We're losing you. We're not hearing very much of what you're saying, Judy.
University, I remember doing an essay in a theology, and there was a little class, and I remember one sentence.
Yeah. Judy, we're not able to hear you. Judy, we're not able to hear you. Can you hear me?
And it was to conquer death, you only.
Judy, we can't hear you. Sorry.
Anyways,
we can't hear you.
Judy, we're getting all sorts of very interesting kind of cosmic sounds from you, but not your voice. So it's too bad. Well, I have to tell you, Larry, what's come to me when you talked about your name, and maybe I don't know if Judy was alluding to any of this or not, but then talking about Walt Whitman just saying his own name in terms of discovering who am I.
Yeah.
But at the same time, you know, what is our name? I don't know that I have any necessarily any identification with that name and if my own name, if we think about how Swamiji, who's coming, talks about, well, Papa did too, but Swamiji really talks a lot about the me and mine. Mm-hmm. And if you are going beyond the me and mine, and, you know, who is that me? And if we're all part of God, then what is this little name that we know ourselves by? It really doesn't describe us at all. And it's very limiting. And that may be why people take on a spiritual name, is they want something beyond that me and mind and that little limitation of that name. But then, of course, unless they expand spiritually, they've got a different name that can be limited too, you know.
Rather than choosing your own name to be Rainbow or something like that, it is why people ask a guru to give them a name, because they want a name that it would match them or benefit them in some way. I understand that, that's for sure.
But I'm still saying that it's still limitation, isn't it? It's still
sure.
Limitation.
Of course, it is.
You know.
Would you like us to call you Rainbow, Larry? I mean, I'm good with it.
I certainly thought about it, but no, I'm not at that point yet.
Look at in India, it's interesting because people, when I first went there, all their names mean something. So people would say, well, what does your name mean? And then I remembered that Catherine is actually meant pure. So there's there's an attribute to it. It's not something people often don't give a person a name because of a particular attribute, but it's nice to have one that you can focus on.
So my Catholic grandmother on my dad's side insisted all the children be named by a saint, have the name of a saint. She's quite, or at least somebody in the Bible, preferably a saint. But
that's a Catholic.
It's very much a Catholic thing.
I just heard a story that my aunt Bonnie, you know, her mother wanted to name her Bonnie. And I can't remember the story of why. I think it was from a movie or something. And the priest said, no, you know, that's not a saint. You can't name her Bonnie. We're not going to baptize her. But my Aunt Bonnie's mother said, it's got to be Bonnie. So finally the priest said, okay.
Sometimes they solve that with a middle name.
Yeah. Well, sometimes in the Catholic families, it'll be, you know, there'll be five Marias, but then they'll all have different middle names. And then they go by their middle names. And a lot of the Filipino families have that.
Say, Larry.
Yes.
I just want to comment a little bit on a little bit of dichotomy here that's kind of interesting. You know, they tell us, Mother and David, they say, put your mind on God, put your mind on God. We even chant God's name, you know, over and over and over. Then at the same time, you know, you bring up Ramana Maharshi and who am I? Well, the answer, of course, if you delve deeply enough into it, is I am God, right?
Yeah, I am he. Yeah.
But blessed spirit, I am he. But the whole time we're focusing on God. We're repeating God's name. We're talking to God. We're beseeching God. We're praying to God as if God is separate from ourselves.
True, true. Yeah.
And so that is, it is literally the definition of the human consciousness.
Yeah.
That God is separate from ourselves. So we probably, all of us have had that experience where you meditate and you get lifted up to a point. You actually have, you know, for a limited amount of time, that realization that you literally, it's not an intellectual thing. You literally feel that oneness with God. And what's so fascinating about that state is in that state, there's no talking to God.
Yeah, that's right.
You're not talking to God. You're not chanting God's name. You're not praying.
Yeah.
You are that.
Yeah.
You know, so all these things that we say, like you are that or I am one or these things, they make no sense. They're throwaway phrases when we're in a human consciousness. But the minute you rise up, the minute you get uplifted, all of a sudden they make all the sense in the world, suddenly. So it's this really interesting dichotomy of being in a human consciousness and being exposed to the intellectual idea that we and God are one. Well, wouldn't that be nice? Oh yes, we're all part of nature. You know, whatever. You don't really realize it. You know, it's just really an idea. And so if you want to go to God, if you want to address God, you're always talking to God. Like God is separate from you. You're praying to God. You're beseeching God. Oh God, help me. Oh God, give me peace. You know, God, make me one with thee. Lift me up. Always admonishing and communicating with God as separate from yourself.
Well, I've always thought that there's three phases. Actually, you talk about God in the third person when you're talking to other people, and you even educate yourself in a kind of inner dialogue talking about God. And then the higher state is to talk in the second person, to talk to God directly. And that's the state that most of the world who are religious nowadays are in. But this is blasphemous, okay, of course, to them. Sorry?
Can you give me an example of the second person?
Well, you say, God, please help me. I mean, that's just second person just means, you know, communicating directly with someone.
Right.
But still implicit, as you say, is the duality, is that you're not the same as God. So the first person is when Mother called it the perpendicular pronoun, you know, I. But it's so blasphemous, and I understand why, because it's many people think I am God, because, and I know that because you're not. That's not the God that we're interested in, is it? If we have this idea that, you know, a divine right of king or a divine king, well, that means everyone else is not. That's not the one we're interested in. This is the one that's all inclusive, but it's a shock to realize that, oh no, I am everything. But then the weight is on your shoulders too, so. But it is the fact that we're taught, blessed spirit, I am he, I am that I am, all of those kinds of things, is really difficult for Christians to take because they're so completely
It's difficult in a human consciousness because the very definition of a human consciousness is separation.
Yeah,
true. Defines human consciousness.
Yeah.
You know, and it's rare to have God consciousness displayed in this world. It's rare to see it in our priests. It's rare to see it in our ministers. It's rare.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, it's rare to see it in ourselves. But when we do see it and when we do feel it, there is nothing like it on this earth. I mean, it's something hopefully you never forget. You know, it is literally, we talk about being cast out of the Garden of Eden, cast out of paradise. You're literally entering back in. I mean, you've leaned your ladder against the wall, you know, and you've climbed over the top and you get to hang out in there, you know, as long as you are able until you inevitably float out the door again. But it certainly is a divine experience when it happens. And what I love about it is it's not an intellectual experience, is it? It's not an idea.
Well, I think your
it's
point
an experience.
That, I think your point that you don't have that dual nature when you're in that state. The idea that you have to talk to God does kind of elude you. I think, you know, when I was around Mother so many times, that was what I was confronting, was that I didn't have any questions. Didn't have any, you know, I was just glad to be.
If you think about it, so much of the conflict in this world comes from duality.
Yeah, of course. All of it does,
Men versus women, you know, good mm-hmm. versus evil. It's them versus us. I mean, it's always duality.
Right.
And all of a sudden, you know, you rise up in consciousness and there is no conflict.
Right.
It's actually unimaginable. Why would there be any conflict? It is all I.
Well, to see each person as your brother and sister, to see each person as yourself, all of those things, those are really, everyone says, well, that's what you should try to attain to, and I get that. But it is also a mark of a saint, a person who has that characteristic. Maybe we can all try to attain to it. We want to be humble, all those things we want to be. But when you see it, it's a mark of a saint. It's a mark of attainment. It truly, right. Truly is. Yeah, it's a measure of it.
You know what I used to love is, I don't know if you remember back in the dark mists of time, I think it was 1993, you and I went to see, SRF was in Seattle, and they were doing a presentation on a master's 100 year anniversary, I think, of his birth, right?
Right, yeah.
And
they had a video.
Yeah, so one of the things that I was struck by, they interviewed all these people that had gone to see Master, right?
Yeah.
And this one guy, he was really cute. He was like a motorcycle guy or something. You know, he had
Beatnik.
He had that, yeah, exactly like that. And he said, boy, I had all these questions, so many questions. You know, I was really conflicted, you know, about a whole bunch of things about the path. And so I finally got my interview with, you know, Master, and I went there and I sat with him. Sudden, he's just lifted up. And Master goes, do you have any questions? And he goes, oh, no, I don't have any questions. He goes, well, you know, do you have some conflicts? Do you have some things you're working on? Big smile on his face. Oh, no, I no conflicts.
Nothing at all.
he just got lifted up into that place where, you know, just all of that stuff just kind of melts away. And, you know, it's funny because, you know, we're kind of taught that to go to that place, you need to die, right? You need to leave your body. Mm-hmm. What needs to die is human consciousness. You know,
that's a really difficult teaching because, you know, you, first of all, you can't have only one Jesus, and he's not even accepted by most of the people in the world. But the implicit notion here on this earth is that, yeah, you can't be divine. You can't take that knowledge and actually practice it in yourself. You can't accept that. And you're not allowed to. And it would be blasphemy, all of those negative things associated with it. But, you know, I think people have, this is something that's an experience that has been with man all along. And we think, well, it's just, we're going through different yugas and all of that. I think there's always great masters on this earth, but they're very difficult to see and they're very difficult to discern. And there's a lot of flim-flam too, of course.
That was exactly what happened to me when I was at the ashram. I was like, okay, I have these questions I need to ask Swamiji. And then I'd get in his room and I didn't have any more questions.
You got your answer.
So uplifted. Yeah. And then I get back to my room and go, oh yeah, I got to remember to ask that. And then again, I mean, I was so fortunate to get to sit in his room with them. And then, whew, question's gone. No questions.
You know, Michelle.
Then I get back to my room, I go, oh, darn it.
One of these guys in these interviews, they had the same experience. You know, they went back multiple times, just like you. You know, and every time they sat at Master's feet, you know, all the questions went away.
So now Swami Muktananda is coming, and I have this one question I want to ask him. So I'm like, okay, I'm not going to forget. But I probably am. Once I start chanting, I'll just get uplifted and I won't have the question anymore.
Write it down, Michelle, and we'll hand it
to you. Yeah. Leo Kart's story with Master, it was also the other part of the story is Master told him to write down your problems and put them in your shirt pocket. And he called him and told him, make sure you put that in your shirt pocket before you come to me today. And then when Leo Cox got there, He said, well, do you have any problems? He said, oh, no, sir. Everything's A-okay. He says, yes, you do. Look in your shirt pocket. Oh, wow. Actually, yeah, I have all these problems here. But, yeah, his whole point was when he was with Master, just they all floated away.
That's a real gift, isn't it? It's a real gift that Masters give to the world. It's quite amazing. You have to experience that stuff, though, to know. You know, it's too bad that we don't appreciate saints as enough as we do. You know, it's usually people who aren't as well educated. The intellectual world that we've got now is so able to pull people away from any humility enough to be around someone who you would treat with great respect and would, you know. Oh, there's so many examples in history. You know, Sai Baba, Shirdi Sai Baba, there's a famous story that's told in that book about him, the incredible Sai Baba. There's an English woman who wanted a child, and she was pretty well convinced that if she went to him that he could do it, he could give it to her. But when she was actually in his presence, she had the reverse thing. She's seeing herself as being so far above all these people, all these peasants around him, that she couldn't pull herself away from that. You couldn't make a request of someone who was living in that kind of life with all of these people who clearly weren't as great as she. I mean, it's funny. I'm sure she didn't see it. I mean, it was more just like disgust, perhaps, or just kind of trepidation about what am I doing here? This is crazy. This is not possible. This is a God man, you know. And these are difficult things to come down on. You know, when we spend a lifetime, one of the great things about the Buddha story is that his father knew that he could be a spiritual master or a king. So he really wanted him not to see the world, not to see any of the pain of the world, to keep that person completely set aside. And so that happens to many people. We think, oh, being a rich English woman, or, you know, her husband was a bigwig in the English system, or just the fact that she was English and they were Indian, doesn't really matter, but they have these things that really can be barriers to just understanding the whole spiritual world. You know, the squalor and all of the things in the world really can be seen as lotuses on the pond of a murky old pond. You know, it's how you see the world and also experience with this world. I think really much of us, of what we're doing here, is having an experience with all of the different aspects of God, all of the extremes of God are much more apparent because our noses are rubbed in it. So we can then get comfortable with the world as it is. And then if we can get past that, we can really make progress, or more progress for sure. But, you know, we have, it is difficult in this realm. You know, Jerry Trofimchuk had this great story about a preacher, and it was, I think it's in the, a river runs through it. But if not, it was something, oh, I think it was, I'm sorry, it was not, it was something Jerry Trofimchuk gave us, and we were always asking him where he had read this. Anyway, I'll tell you that. So he said his father always prayed as though he were a disgruntled client or a customer in a poorly run hotel. You know, he always prayed with that attitude that, you know, you got to fix this and you got to fix that. And
where is the hot water?
Yeah. Don't you know what's happening down the street here and all this? Don't we all wonder how we can have, you know, evil in the world and how we can have bad things happen to good people? It's kind of the same thing. But the idea that what was funny about it was the idea that that's the means or the way that he prayed that. Just evokes so much of how true that is. We all have so much to complain about. But, you know, when you're with a saint, you just don't have anything to even question, much less complain about. And that's something that you have to experience, and it's to understand it. And you can just go on other people's, you can either believe other people who have experienced it or not. You know, so many of us, we wanted this so badly. We went looking for it, you know. So it's different with us. We wanted to be convinced, but we knew it was there, and we wanted that because we've had it before. This is an amazing place. Amazing place.
Long before I came to this path, I got pretty angry with God, and I said, I am done. I do not want to do these patterns anymore. You have to show me the way out, how to break all these patterns.
Yeah.
And that was, you know, years before I came here, but he did.
Yeah, it is amazing. Praying to God is really powerful, especially when you're up against it. You can make a difference. And so many people have that experience. We're often disappointed because things don't go further than that. We always want to go all the way in one fell swoop. But you know, we have the lesson of Job, don't we? He went through a lot and never gave up. Never lost patience with God. It's a archetypal story. It's a the essential story. And Meher Baba's quote that we've passed around that David loved. The first part is a honeymoon in which everything goes easily. And the second part, like that you are in now, is very long. And it has elements of disgust and disappointment. But you must hold on through that. You must hold on. Hold on to my dhamma, my gown. I'll pull you through. And the third level is when you don't have to fight for any of that. It comes easily. So much of this spiritual path is just holding on to be like Job.
If you don't mind, Larry, before I don't think of it, next week we won't have Wednesday night service. And
as long as you will be here, yeah.
I'll be here, so.
Yeah, thanks for telling me. And so we will, I'll put out a talk on Sunday. But we won't have service here, and we won't have service the next Sunday either. But we will meet in 2 weeks from today in this kind of form. You know, Mother's admonition, her suggestion, her advice, that we just keep our mind on God, kind of includes all of these things of, even who am I, but certainly all of the aspects of the bhakti path. And because keeping your mind on God expresses it, comes as a automatic reflex for me and many of you of the Ram mantra, Master's Ram mantras, all things to do with God, whatever we choose. Lord Jesus Christ, have mercy on me. And so all of that's keeping your mind on God. That's the kind of a general teaching. It's a wonderful teaching. So I'll read this Richard Strauss thing again. It's short. And tomorrow the sun will shine again. And on the path that I shall take, it will unite us, happy ones, again. Amid the same sun-breathing earth, and to the shore broad blue-waved, we shall quietly and slowly descend. Speechless we shall gaze into others' eyes, and the speechless silence of bliss shall fall on us. Let's say our closing prayer. Oh, Heavenly Father.
Oh, Heavenly Father.
Divine Mother.
Divine Mother.
I feel the wonder and the beauty.
I feel the wonder and the beauty.
Of thy glorious presence.
Of thy glorious presence.
In every part of my being.
In every part of my being.
My heart is bursting with my love for thee.
My heart is bursting with my love for thee.
I kneel in adoration at thy feet.
I kneel in adoration at thy feet.
And surrender myself to thee.
And surrender myself to thee.
I feel the power of thy perfection.
I feel the power of thy perfection.
Surging in every cell of my body.
Surging in every cell of my body.
My mind and my intelligence.
My mind and my intelligence.
Are radiant with thy healing light.
Are radiant with thy healing light.
My soul is filled with the ecstasy and bliss.
My soul is filled with the ecstasy and bliss.
Of my communion with thee.
Of my communion with thee.
I and my Father are one.
I and my Father are one.
Blessed Spirit, I am he.
Blessed Spirit, I am he.
Peace, bliss.
Amen.
I'll play some music as we all want to leave at our own pace and turn it off in about 4 or 5 minutes.